Welcome to Best of Day ACG 2016. This is the fourth and final part of our series. My name is Miguel Ruggiero. I'm professor of medicine at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center. And today I'm joined by Dr. Susie Kane, who's professor of medicine at Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. So Susie, in part four, we were talking a minute ago, there were some interesting abstracts. What did you take away, or what did you find?
So there was an interesting study looking at the concept of a rapid infusion for infliximab. We know that patients tolerate 2 hours very well. That seems to be standard across basically the world.
Right.
But can you do it faster? And so the folks at Houston Methodist prospectively asked all of their patients, so it was 120 patients, whether they would be willing to try a faster infusion schedule, so 60 minutes, so basically half the time.
Right.
And then they were able to retrospectively compare those who said yes to those who declined the offer. And interestingly, it was very well tolerated doing it at 60 minutes. They did have several patients who subjectively had some symptoms that were not well documented, but patient preference basically drove the decision to go back to the 120 minutes. There were no signals in terms of whether it was Crohn's or ulcerative colitis, any kind of sex, or whether you were on a co-immunomodulator
combination,
whether pre-meds were on board or not. So I think that there are several reasons, whether it's for patient experience, convenience, and then clearly from a health economic standpoint, there would be advantages to doing it that way, that they were able to save over 7,000 minutes.
Wow.
And that equated to about 121 hours. And if you put that into FTE or nursing time or whichever infusion rent, whatever,
clearly to the patient what that means.
Exactly. Yeah. The opportunity cost to the patient.
Right.
That clearly this is a good direction to be heading. Certainly the pediatric world wants to hear whether this is safe to do, because the kids should be in school, the parents should be at work, and that the stakes may be even higher for them in terms of being able to do it faster. I will say that this was an infusion center study.
Right.
So
this
was not done in the patient's homes and looking to see whether it could be done faster. And so that came up in the discussion, whether now that if patients were doing it at home, which is a trend in certain insurance carriers, that this was not condoned or even studied, that at home you could do it in a rapid fashion.
Right.
This is still in an infusion center at a hospital-based, facility.
And so even though it could be, it's clear and important to point out that this was done in an infusion center. So I think the interesting aspects I'm hearing with this are that we can get faster with our infusions. With infliximab now, with the experience we have, they showed that not 120 minutes, but even 60 minutes. And as you said, no real serious adverse events related to the infusions. I think they mentioned, too, that they give an antihistamine and acetaminophen, but these weren't patients getting, whopping doses of steroids to get them through. They did well.
Right.
And I know in my practice we're starting to move to these 60-minute infusions, and I think you mentioned that you're starting to consider a look at that as well.
Right.
So very clinically relevant.
Exactly.
So what else did you find? I know there were a couple others that you mentioned that caught your eye.
So there was an intriguing study out of Cleveland Clinic, and actually Magid Risk, who is the first author on this paper, is not an IBDer per se, but he is very interested in quality improvement, and I think that that's where this stemmed from. So, we talked a little bit about health economics with the rapid infusions, that clearly hospital readmission rates are associated with quality metrics that are looked at from the payer standpoint as well as from the government standpoint. So we know that hospital readmission for the diabetics, for the CHF, for the COPD are important and costly. Well, how about the IBD population?
Right.
So Cleveland Clinic has a very large system, has a lot of IBD patients and a lot of hospital admissions. So over a 2-year span, they looked at patients who were readmitted within 30 days of their hospital discharge. And why? were there any kind of signals or variables that could predict who was going to get readmitted? So this was a prospective study looking at a long time frame of patients who were in a tertiary care practice, so maybe sickest of the sick,
right,
but that are at high risk for high cost care,
right?
So you want to try to predict, if you can, in a reliable prospective way, who you might want to spend more time with and not necessarily just kick to the curb.
And like you said, why they're coming back.
And too. Why are they coming back? So it was very interesting that they identified seven variables in their model. And four of those seven had to do directly with pain. If you were admitted for pain, if you were having a flare with active disease documented, whether you were treated with narcotics during that hospitalization, and if you were sent home or discharged on pain medicine. So four out of the out of the seven. So clearly there's a theme here that
pain matters
and it drives outcome and also likely cost and healthcare utilization.
Right. So it sounds like the take homes that I'm hearing from what you're saying are that they've come up with this interesting index, this readmission to the hospital predictive index. And it's validated. They're starting to validate it. Maybe this will be a tool that we'll all use as part of our electronic health records and systems that will kind of flag us in a way in the future. And they started to identify some of these risk factors for readmission. And I think pain's an interesting one. And the narcotic piece of this, too, is it's playing a big role. So very interesting study. Like you said, economically, this is an important study. From an insurance standpoint, important as well. So good. So let's, what else? What else did you find?
Miguel, I'll actually turn the question back to you.
All right.
That there was a very interesting study that I found talking about medical home. But because this is from your institution and you have been so an integral part of this whole concept and this study, that I want to hear from the horse's mouth about this and share with everybody what was happening there.
Great. Well, thanks for asking. and I think, as you alluded to, this was a patient-centered medical home model. So we mentioned a minute ago about predictive readmission risk factors. We're looking at these new models of care. And really, this is a specialty medical home. We're used to the primary care medical homes, where the gastroenterologist, myself and my colleagues, become the principal care provider for that patient, almost really the primary care provider. And what we did is we set out with our own health plan, so we have an integrated health plan system within Pittsburgh and UPMC, and we looked at how can we take care of the whole patient care with a team that includes psychiatrists, social worker, nutritionists, gastroenterologists, surgeons, this whole team, looking at taking care of the whole patient and ultimately decreasing cost and decreasing utilization. So the primary outcomes of the study we're interested in are, one, could we enroll? Could we get 300 patients in 1 year? Because if we can't do that, forget it. Two is, could we reduce, could we reduce emergency room? Could we reduce emergency room and hospitalizations within that first year by at least 2%. Now, that doesn't sound like much, but the point is that's a lot of money at the end of the day. And then finally, we're interested in quality improvement, but specifically quality of life. Could we help these patients with their quality of life? So getting to the results, what we did and what we found is we were able to enroll 323 patients, so we exceeded the enrollment in 1 year, and we were able to improve their quality of life. Quality of life, the SIBDQ, which, as you know, is a validated score, went up about 10 points, which, again, was fairly significant. And so these patients were better in terms of quality of life. And finally, I think what most of us found intriguing is we are able to decrease emergency room and decrease hospitalizations by not just 2%, but nearly 50%.
Wow.
And when we look at the patients who had been in the medical home for at least 6 months, it still held about 40 to 45% reduction, which if you equate that in a dollar amount is significant. So I think the take-home message from this are new models of care are here. Patient-centered medical home is one for the specialists, and I think IBD really lends to that. and we can improve quality, and we can also decrease ER and hospitalizations. And stay tuned. I have a feeling there will be other models. This isn't certainly the final one, but it's a very interesting concept.
That's so terrific. And so what I hear is that this is feasible.
Right.
That the patients are on board with this. They're choosing to participate, which
yes.
is going to clearly then make change possible, and that it's successful, as you've shown, and that it's durable.
Right.
Because it wasn't just a flash in the pan 2 weeks. This was 6 months.
Right.
And so the trifecta of success.
So far, so good. But we'll see.
That's great.
And so I agree with your take-home messages, and thank you for asking me about that. And we'll see what next year brings. But with that, I wanted to thank you, Susie, for your time. That was wonderful. I learned a lot. It sounds like a great meeting with a lot of interesting best-of-day activities. So in conclusion, I would like to again thank the audience. That is the fourth and final segment of Best of Day ACG 2016. Thanks for enjoying ACG. Thanks for joining us, and hopefully you learned something through these interactions. Have a good day.